You're listening to Sports Radio Detroit.
Aren't you going to congratulate me, Fred?
What?
Oh, well, we had a game plan, Fred. I was waiting for you to start the show here. Parsons and Slow on Sports Radio Detroit and AlienXRadio.com.
I was going to congratulate you, but then I got high.
Fred, Afro Man featuring Fred Slow.
Classic Fred Slow.
Fred was going to laugh at his own joke, and then he got, no, wait, you laughed at your own joke anyway.
Oh, my gosh. I'm either autistic or high, and I don't know which one is funnier. Congratulations to not just you, Mike Parsons, but the entire state of Michigan and probably part of Wisconsin for the Devil's Lettuce up there now, huh, buddy?
Well, it's no longer the Devil's Lettuce anymore because it's legal. Yes, on Tuesday, I don't know if you've heard about this, but there was an election on Tuesday.
What do you mean, you people?
I meant the people who are listening to us.
Oh, the listener. Got it.
Yeah, the listener. You listeners probably would have sounded less accusational and vaguely prejudiced, but yeah, Fred, there was an election this past Tuesday, and here in the state of Michigan, recreational marijuana is going to be legal starting in 2020.
Isn't that crazy?
It is.
And you can you can grow marijuana plants.
Yeah, and here in Michigan, at least medicinal marijuana has been legal for quite a while, but recreational marijuana hasn't been, and it will be very soon. But of course, people are coming out of the woodwork now, you know, with all these warnings saying, now that weed's legal, here's what you need to know. And it pretty much is just like, you know, don't smoke weed and drive, and don't show up to work and smoke weed. So pretty much what they're saying is treat weed like alcohol and you're fine.
How much easier is it going to be to watch the Lions play while high?
I don't know, Fred. That's a silly question, Fred, because I swear to God, next year is their year. Next year, they're finally going to turn that corner, Fred, and you won't even need medical recreational marijuana to watch the Lions.
Does the passing of medical, and this is the way you should do it, the way that Michigan is doing it, that you can grow your own weed, smoke your own weed way, not the Canada bullshit way where you have to get government cheese weed, like the good, like the American way, the way Michigan's doing it. And also, do you feel like it took attention away from the craziest fucking midterm in the history of all midterms?
No, because heading into the midterm, you know, most people were saying, yeah, I'll vote for marijuana. Kind of as a side note, most people were going into the voting booth to either A, stick it to Donald Trump, or B, stick it to the snowflakes who hate Donald Trump. So Donald Trump was right about one thing this week. He has made this midterm very interesting. And I think this is the first time when I first started voting, Fred, I swear to God, I'm not smoking weed. I've got too many thoughts in my head and I can't finish one.
This is what happens when you get fired up, and I don't mean fire up a blunt.
Yeah. Not even once, Fred, not even once. Yes. When I first started voting, I remember midterm elections were the elections that A, nobody paid attention to, and B, nobody voted in. But this pretty much felt like a presidential election. Even though the president himself was not on the ballot, his decision-making power was, and his ability to make policy was. And that drove out the turnout.
Because it feels now like everyone is a disciple of. Like, it feels like, no, you're not voting for the president, but you're voting for, like, a disciple of. And even like, Ted Cruz, who, like, according to the president, has the ugliest wife. Like,
but he endorsed him anyway.
Yeah. Even Donald Trump's mortal enemy, Ted Cruz, Teddy Boy, is also Donald Trump. Like, in RIP, you know, Beto O'Rourke. But, like, this is what politics is now. You're not voting for your politician. You're voting for a politician that either is or is not the president.
Right. 2016, Donald Trump. Ted Cruz's dad helped kill Kennedy. 2018, Donald Trump. Vote for Ted Cruz. He's a fantastic senator. My good friend, Ted Cruz.
Crickets? Because that's what it should be. Crickets. Like, no, like this is your president. Like my sworn mortal enemy, Ted Cruz, who is my best friend. That is speaking out of both sides of your mouth.
Well, I think one thing that Donald Trump is showing us is that relationships at that level, whether they be political or business, are very transactional. Back in 2016, the only thing that Ted Cruz could offer Donald Trump was nothing. It was Ted Cruz's presence in Donald Trump's life was a net negative until Donald Trump won the primary. In 2018, Donald Trump needed Ted Cruz to maintain his seat in the Senate so that Donald Trump could, A, put any Supreme Court justice on the bench if something happens. And then we get the news today that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in the hospital for breaking her ribs.
Like in court, not even like at home. Like
yeah, in her office.
They're at the office.
Donald Trump needs Ted Cruz in the Senate. So now Ted Cruz's presence in Donald Trump's life is a net positive. So since there's something for Donald Trump to gain from Ted Cruz's gain, now Donald Trump is all team Ted Cruz.
Texas is team Donald Trump. Like, Texas is red no matter what, right? Like, I know, like, Austin and Houston and Dallas, but, like, I think it's failed to people just, like, how much more fucking Texas there is. There is so much Texas.
Right. Outside of Austin, Texas is red. It's redder than the deepest crimson, Fred.
Ooh, soldier boy.
You know what I find to be, I don't want to say absolutely amazing, but something I just shake my head at, is how quickly the Republican Party has gotten in line and kissed the ring of Donald Trump. You know, you had a couple of Republicans who kind of would feign opposition to Donald Trump. Like, you had Paul Ryan, who would he would fake some pushback against the president because he had nothing to lose. He was retiring. Same with Jeff Flake. You know, Jeff Flake went through the charade of pretending to want to hear victims of sexual assault out before making a decision on Kavanaugh. But ultimately, what these two guys did before they retired was get in line and do exactly what Donald Trump wanted them to do. And then you got Lindsey Graham, who 2 years ago said that if Donald Trump forced Jeff Sessions to retire as attorney general, there would be all hell to pay. Fast forward to the Kavanaugh hearing. Lindsey Graham's best friend, John McCain, no longer in Senate because he's passed away. It seemed like John McCain was the one who kind of kept the moderate leash on Lindsey Graham, because right, as soon as John McCain wasn't around, Lindsey Graham saw his opportunity to get his political licks in, and he started scolding everyone like an angry male Rue McClanahan.
Jeff Sessions is out. He wasn't the lackey that I think Trump thought he would be. That's my opinion. I mean, yes. I think a lot of people would agree with that.
Gosh, I mean, the beginning of the end of Jeff Sessions is when he recused himself from the Russian probe, which Donald Trump was counting on him to not recuse himself and run interference from the inside. So, you know, Jeff Sessions was a dead man walking since that decision.
What is the holy hell, though? I guess that's my question. Like, what is Lindsey Graham's holy hell that will be paid? Like, that's where my confusion really sets in. Because you have to have, and he's a senator, I mean, you have to have
the consequences.
This, yeah, you have to. Like, you can't. But I guess I'm wrong, though, because, like, as I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, no, here's a half dozen examples from the president of when he said something would happen and it won't. Like, so do you have to?
Yeah, and Fred, you make a good point, because everyone thought that there was going to be this quote unquote blue wave, right? This blue wave was going to sweep through the House. It was going to sweep through Senate. It was going to sweep through all the gubernatorial races. And it was going to be just Democrats cleaning the clock of any Republican that aligned themselves with Donald Trump.
Was it like August when Graham was like, well, he should have an attorney general he has faith in? Like, was it that long ago? Well, a couple months, right?
It was very recent, yes. I'm telling you, when John McCain was still in Senate, Lindsey Graham, he was a moderate. I remember the red hat wearing MAGA Trump loving folks used to hate Lindsey Graham because Lindsey Graham was willing to compromise on things. They called him Lindsey Grahamnesty because he was willing to, compromise on things like immigration. Soon as John McCain was gone, he saw his opportunity to, I don't know if it was to get back in with his base, if it was to position himself in the good graces of Donald Trump now that there's a job opening in his administration. But he went full. He went full Donald Trump. So at the Kavanaugh hearings, and he has not looked back.
So then why is Lindsey Graham like a full-on coward? And then why is Donald Trump not?
I think what happened, Fred, is during the primaries, at least, every Republican who got the blessing of Donald Trump won their primary.
Yes.
In some states, that helped in the general. In other states, it didn't. Like here in Michigan, Fred, Democrats won all the major offices. We elected a Democrat governor. We elected a Democrat for attorney general, secretary of state, Senate. But the Republicans maintained control of the state House of Representatives and the state Senate. Nationwide, yes, the Democrats took control of the House of Representatives, but they actually gained a seat or two in Senate, which was the body that confirmed Judge Brett Kavanaugh a little more than a month ago. And that leads me to two conclusions. Either A, the majority of the country believed Judge Kavanaugh, or B, they didn't care, because you would think if the Judge Kavanaugh debacle had any influence, it would have been in the Senate, and Republicans actually picked up seats in the Senate, which is to me, it seems like the Senate's more important to have than the House, because
they're all balanced. It's all a balance.
Not really, because any Donald Trump super conservative bill won't get past the House
right
to the Senate. But like I said, Ruth Bader Ginsburg goes down, or any one of the liberal judges on the Supreme Court goes down, the House of Representatives don't get to vote on that. The president picks it, and then the Senate confirms them. And since Republicans picked up a couple of seats in the Senate, next time there's a Supreme Court, there's an opening on the Supreme Court, Donald Trump can have his pick. Donald Trump could put Omarosa in there he wouldn't, but he could put anyone in there, and they'll get confirmed.
I don't like it. You just put Ruth Bader Ginsburg in her grave.
Well, I'm not going to say it's funny, because it's not funny, but ever since the Kavanaugh hearing, people have been posting, hey, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, if you need an organ donor, if you need a blood transfusion, call me anytime, day and night. And then we get the word that Ruth Bader Ginsburg fell in her office, broke three ribs, and yes, three broken ribs isn't that serious unless you're 85 years old, and then a whole bunch of crap could happen.
So you believe this is foul play?
No, not necessarily. How so?
This is a targeted attack against Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She was pushed down a flight of stairs. That's what you're saying. You're proclaiming that.
No, I am not. An InfoWars reader. I'm sure there'll be conspiracy theories, but no, I just think it was bad timing and a bad stroke of luck.
You think she had a stroke?
No, she survived. She survived cancer, and she had a stent in her heart. So that's not too far off. But no, I think it was. I think it was just a bad. Well, I don't want to say bad break, but you know what I mean.
The part there's no chill in politics right now, right? So
hell no.
So Tuesday the election comes and this is the first time I voted in New Mexico, so that was kind of exciting. I didn't have to go to a certain precinct; I could go anywhere in the city. Crazy,
really?
Yeah, crazy, huh? They just like pulled me up on a database and put in my specific to me ballot right there, and then went and did my thing. So kind of a cool
did
little.
You guys do paper ballots down there?
Yeah.
You fill it in with pen.
Yeah, and then it like you have to feed it in yourself, and no one's allowed to touch it between the time you go from your deal to the deal or whatever. So
I wrote mine down on a napkin with crayon.
You did? Oh, Harambe.
Rest in peace.
But
I went to the voting booth and say I vote for Harambe.
So the election, so the House is Democratic and the Senate is Republic-matic, and this is where we're at. So you would think like January 20th, 21st, whatever day it is.
Something like that.
So whatever day it is, like that day, you would think that like the House of Representatives will be like, let's see those taxes, Donald.
Yeah.
Like right.
That's
like,
what a lot of people. Yeah. That,
what else
that's
could
what
be?
A lot of people are predicting.
And it'll be everything, right? Like it'll be literally everything they'll ask for.
Maybe. I don't know, because here's the thing. It seems like for every legal punch, there's a counter punch.
Well, and Donald said that on the Twitter. So the Donald was like, I dare you, House of Representatives, because we got the Senate and we'll swing back. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah. Like Donald Trump is looking for a fight. Now that he got now that he did Jim Acosta like that, he's looking for the next person that he can get into a rumble with.
It's the craziest time, and it's super polarizing, right? Like there's this just this weird, and we were talking about disciples earlier as far as like political affiliation, but like there's such a fandom about it now where like people are
personality.
People are legitimately fucking crazy right now.
Yeah, and it's really weird too, because I have to be honest, Fred. Going into 2016 and going into this election, I really had no idea what to expect, because depending on who you follow on Facebook, either the entire country loves Donald Trump and it's just a loud minority of Antifa and a bunch of other ne'er-do-wells who are working to undermine Donald Trump and the silent majority of the American people who love him. And then, you know, you follow someone else on Twitter or Facebook, and it seems like Donald Trump is going to be impeached before Election Day. And really, I think kind of looking at the election results, what we're seeing is that, yes, the majority of the country doesn't like Donald Trump, but it's not as big of a majority as you thought it would be. It's like, you know, like 51-49. Like there's still a large chunk of this country who either still like Donald Trump or have been converted over to being part of his cult, so to speak.
Well, there's a lot of truth in what you're saying, because you saw the prediction, like we talked about Blue Wave. You saw, like we talked about Texas with Beto O'Rourke. Like it was like there was going to be a big change. There was going to be a big to do, and it simply didn't happen. And it was kind of a far stretch anyways to think in 2018 the blue would be able to take over the House and the Senate. Now 2020 is a different story. There's 20 Republican seats up and there's only 10 Democratic seats up, and apparently those 20 Republican seats, like a handful of them are you know not running for re-election. So there might be another story then. But the way that votes are laid out it's not necessarily playing in what my opinion to be favor of the country. I do understand why it's set up this way. to where everyone is represented fairly. So it's not just Chicago and Houston and LA and New York that gets to elect who's going on and where they're going on at. It's the entire country. And that's where I think you're right, because the flyover states and the third coast, they get just as much as an opinion as everyone else. And because of that, I mean, it's an opinion I don't necessarily agree with, but because of that, it's the fairest way. So if we want to be like hate filled and bigoted and standoffish from everyone else and destroy American soy croppers, then cool, we can do that. Like, that's a thing we can do, and we're doing it. Like, it's very neat. We can all smoke weed now too.
Right. Well, at least in Michigan. Michigan's the first Midwest state to come on up, Fred. We'll clam bake, but on a Friday, because I don't want to do that before I have to be at work. It's hard enough for me to focus anyway. To me, I think the most unpredictable thing that happened was how predictable the results were. Like, the Republicans having control of the Senate and the Democrats having control of the House, stuff like that happens routinely in these types of midterm elections. I mean, I think everyone was looking for something seismic, right? Either there was going to be a seismic blue wave, or we were going to be shocked by a seismic red tsunami. But really what happened was what happens in a lot of midterm elections, where one party maintains one large government body and another party gets control of the other one. And that's what happened here. I think everybody thought that either Republicans were going to get their clocks cleaned by Democrats, or Republicans were going to shock the world. I think people thought that there was going to be one party who reigned supreme in this midterm election, and the result was split. And just like everything in Donald Trump's presidency, both sides can claim a victory, and both sides can claim that the other team lost. But in reality, this was a draw.
So do we see any big change? Like, we got 2 more years. We got 2 years right now until the next presidential election. And the way the politics have worked for at least my last 10 plus years, 12 plus years, is the reelection campaign is going to start in February. We're not far off from that season. So does anything really happen over the next 2 years with their current setup?
Well, probably no legislation. There's going to be gridlock, because unless it's a left-leaning law, it's not going to pass the House, and if it passes the House, it'll get knocked down in the Senate. I think the biggest thing that could happen is Trump getting to appoint another Supreme Court justice or two. And I think since Robert Kennedy was the swing vote, I think that the conservatives have a one judge advantage in the Supreme Court. If Donald Trump can appoint another Supreme Court justice, they're going to have pretty much close to a supermajority. And, you know, the Supreme Court can't make any decisions unless a case gets to them.
Right.
So people who are worried about Roe versus Wade, people who are afraid of gay marriage being repealed, the Supreme Court can't repeal anything unless the case comes across their desk. But there may be some activist lawyers out there. There may be some activist judges out there who know that the Supreme Court could end up with somewhat of a supermajority, and they'll manipulate the system to kick a case to overturn Roe v. Wade all the way up to the Supreme Court, or kick a case to overturn gay marriage all the way up to the Supreme Court. And we could see these two progressive cornerstones be overturned. I think it's a real possibility.
Well, in the thing about the Supreme Court is they choose the cases that they see. So now, and not just the big ones, the two or three or four big ones that everyone references, it's all the ones underneath of it too. And we're getting into, like, at least I feel this way, we're getting to a point now where there's so many different definitions of, like, freedom, and there's so many definitions of, like, individual, and there's so many definitions in this ever-changing world where, like, will those things be heard fairly? Will people who identify as this, or people who live this way, and I'm just saying this because in your own mind, listener, you can put in whatever adjective or pronoun you want. Like, if those things aren't being seen on a regular and fair basis, then I think that's where you have an impact. That's whenever I think it's like, tougher to say that everyone, you know, under this flag equal and without obstacle, because then I think there would be. And that's where a failure comes. If you're on purpose or neglectful or whatever way, if you're ignoring a segment of people because of whatever reason, I think there's a huge failure.
Yeah, and to be honest, the government was designed for gridlock. You know, the checks and balances were put into place to ensure that new laws and these big sweeping societal changes didn't happen too fast. I mean, just look how long it took for gay marriage to be legalized. Just look at how long it took for Obamacare to be passed. I mean, that's the way the government's supposed to work, and it is going to work that way. But the president does have, I think, the biggest ace in his pocket is if he has to pick another Supreme Court justice. A couple of other takeaways for this, Fred. How much time do we have left in this segment?
You know, we got about four
minutes. Okay. Number one, I think that this year's election shows that celebrities, even though people want to vote for celebrities, i.e. Donald Trump, and i.e. When people are talking about 2020 contenders, it's always they're always naming celebrities. People want to vote for celebrities, but they don't want celebrities to tell them how to vote. In Georgia, the gubernatorial race, Oprah and a bunch of other celebrities stumped for Stacey Abrams. She lost. All the celebrities in Texas were behind Beto O'Rourke. He lost to the incumbent Ted Cruz. And Taylor Swift came out and she endorsed a Democrat for Congress, and they lost. So it seems like the candidates with the biggest star power behind them, they did not fare well.
I didn't endorse anyone.
No. And that's why Ted Cruz won, Fred.
I did vote for Gary Johnson.
Again? What, did you write him in? Or are you talking about in the last presidential?
No. He's running for something here in New Mexico. Like, I totally
voted. Oh, really?
Yeah. So I've actually voted for him a few times.
Wow. Yeah. Also, Mitt Romney's in Congress now.
Oh,
what the
I
hell?
Saw that. Yeah.
Like that guy, it's any port in the storm for that guy. Jesus.
Colorado? Do you see what Colorado did?
No, what'd they do?
They got the first gay governor? Governor? Senator?
Oh. Well, that's good.
Something openly gay, not regular gay, openly.
Yeah. Well, that good for them. So, yeah, it's very weird, Fred, because, you know, like in certain states like Georgia and Florida, the super conservative won out. But then you look at Colorado, they elected a gay governor. You look at Wisconsin, where they ousted two-term governor Scott Walker, who was a Republican. So, yeah, like I said, results were mixed all over the country. And I think the best news, Fred, do you remember the name Kim Davis?
Ah, she don't want you to get married.
Nope. She was the Kentucky law clerk who refused to sign marriage licenses for same-sex couples after gay marriage was legalized. Well, guess what? She did not win a re-election. So I have a feeling she is going to look very stupid in history books. Mike Huckabee is going to look stupid right next to her because he made sure that his face was front and center holding up her hand when she didn't go to jail for refusing to do her job as an elected official.
How is he related to Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
He is her dad.
She's an idiot.
Yeah. And you know, her job is to lie. And I got a quick take on this on the other end of the break. It's Parsons and Slow, Sports Radio Detroit, and AlienXRadio.com.
Do you love pop culture? Discussions about pop culture? Ranking and rating treasured pieces of that shared culture against each other?
I mean, I do think Flea's a good bass player. He does what he does very well. And like I said, he's like a rock star, you know? He's eccentric. What is so funny?
I just didn't know he talked so long about Flea. I didn't know anybody had so many feelings.
I do.
So many feelings.
I got feelings.
Yeah. Music, movies, television, food, sports, pro wrestling. We are the determination of what is over or underrated across all fields of greater cultural consumption. Subscribe and review on Apple Podcasts and Podbean, or visit us at sportsradiodetroit.com. Over Under Fair, your final word in pop culture relevance.
Mike, I'm real tired.
Yeah, Fred, what you have been a cranky, sassy little bitch all show. What's wrong?
I'm real tired, Mike. I'm tired of it all. I'm tired of all the bullshit.
Wait, how could you be tired? You got an extra hour of sleep last weekend.
Do you think this is all worth it for 1 hour? Do you think my clinical seasonal depression that will last until March was all worth it, Mike?
Fred, are you going to sit there, look me in the eye over this Google Hangout, and tell me that you don't love driving home from work in the dark at 4:45 p.m.?
I wake up in the dark. I go to work in the dark. I spend all day at the work. I leave the work, and it is dark.
Fred, if you can't get all the vitamin D you need between the hours of 8:15 a.m. and 4:37 p.m., I don't know what to tell you. That's almost eight solid hours of semi-daylight.
The fucking sun sets at 4:30 in the p.m.
And you know what? All the elderly people who eat dinner at 3 and go to bed at 7 are thankful for it.
Mike, it's the dumbest shit on the planet. Like, I'm dead serious about this seasonal depression. I get this. Like, Mike, more people have committed suicide in the United States this year than any year ever. That's a fact. And it's not even the Christmas season yet, when you know a lot more people are going to, and now you throw in this seasonal depression. Like, it's over. It is over for everyone.
I got to be honest, Fred. Every spring forward or fall back, you know, I hear the history lesson as to why we have daylight saving
time. Give it to me. I don't know what it is. Give it to me.
I was going to say, and every year I don't remember it because it has something to do back from when we were a farming society, which we haven't been for over a century. So I don't know why we still do it.
I don't understand why we do it. I thought it had something to do with Native Americans, and I'm being serious.
I thought it had something to do with being an agrarian society or saving money on electricity. I don't know.
Money on electricity? Like, there's still electricity at night.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was pushed through by the big criminal lobby to make it easier to commit crime, because you pretty much have from 5 p.m. till 8 a.m. to either commit crime or be a vampire that sucks people's blood because you can't do it via daylight. I really don't know the practical application of daylight saving
time. The two examples that you just gave literally have nothing to do with the time on the clock. The two examples you did, like, it's still going to be dark that amount of time. There's just no point, period, in the sun coming up earlier in the morning. No one cares if it's sunny at 6:15. Literally no one cares.
Well, Fred, I guess I would Google it, but I don't care enough because it's not going to make me like the sun going down before 5 p.m. any more than I do now.
It's just the bullshit. That's all I'm trying to say. My thesis on this is that daylight savings time is the bullshit. And if you're into it, I like the dark. You know, shut the fucking curtains. That's how I feel.
You know what does screw me up, though, Fred?
What's that?
And you may like this. It seems like they are shortening. Is it daylight saving time when it gets dark early, or is that standard time? Which one's which?
Standard is light later.
Okay, so they do shorten daylight saving time. Daylight saving time used to go from like mid-October through April. Now it goes from November till March. And here in Michigan, it's still winter till about May. So what really screws up my head is when we do spring forward and it's light out at 8 o'clock, but it's only 15 degrees. That messes with my head.
Yeah, but at least 15 degrees in the sun.
That's true. Could you imagine how cold it'd be 15 degrees at night?
I live on top of a 6,000-foot mountain in the middle of the desert. We don't get no snow here. We get darkness, my old friend.
I've come to talk to you again.
Roadrunners. We have roadrunners here. Do you think they can handle the cold? No.
They can handle an anvil. They can also handle going through a mountain that was a tunnel on a mountain that was painted on by a coyote. They can also handle walking on thin air over cliffs as long as nobody looks down. They can handle a lot.
Using Bugs Bunny. That's what we're talking about right now.
I got nothing for you, Fred.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I'm sorry. Give it to me. I'm ready. Go.
Well, Sarah Huckabee Sanders is actually a side note in this whole Jim Acosta CNN versus Donald Trump.
The fuck is this? This is the craziest story, too. Like, every day is the craziest story.
Right. The day after the midterm election, Wednesday, Donald Trump came out and he was claiming victory
For an hour and a half.
For an hour and a half, Fred. Claiming victory because the Democrats only took control of the House and not the Senate. Him and Jim Acosta got into it. Jim Acosta was pretty much asking Donald Trump why he's an asshole.
He was sitting front and center. He had picked a spot out.
Right.
He was like ready to get down.
Right. He was pretty much saying, you know, why are you making up all this shit and turning people against each other? Donald Trump said, shut up, sit down. You're a terrible person. Jim Acosta wouldn't. There was an intern who was a young lady who went to reach for the microphone out of Jim Acosta's hand. Jim Acosta put his arm up to shield her hand from grabbing the microphone.
I don't even agree with that assessment. I think he just did a dip and a dodge.
Yeah, and then he pulled the microphone closer to him, and as the woman, as the intern's hand was reaching in, Jim Acosta's hand made incidental contact with her forearm. The White House.
You are being generous. I don't feel like any of that happened from what I saw.
Well, what did you see?
I saw she reached, he dipped. She reached, he dipped. She reached, he dipped. It was like a Mayweather fight.
Well, there was brief incidental contact with Acosta's hand and her forearm. What the White House did, Fred, is they took a video that was edited by InfoWars that sped up the video that made it look like Jim Acosta slapped her arm violently, and they used that justification to revoke Jim Acosta's White House credential
forever, ever. Right. Probably not.
And here's the thing, okay? We all know the president's a sensitive fella, and we all know that the reason Jim Acosta had his credentials revoked is because he dared question Dear Leader Trump. So just come out and say it. I would actually have more respect for you if you came out and said, look, I'm sick of Acosta's shit. He's always disrupting my press conferences. I've had enough. He's out. But no, they had to make up this story. And what they did is they said that Jim Acosta laid his hand on an intern, and that's why he is being banned. And he's doing that because they're thinking to themselves, okay, what's one thing that liberals criticize us for? It's for victim shaming and for saying someone who has been a victim is not being represented. So what they try to do is they try to manufacture this hypocritical narrative that, oh, well, the liberals want to believe all these victims who say they've been assaulted by men. But look, Jim Acosta, with the sped up video, he put his hand on this woman. And now they're complaining that he got his White House credentials revoked. No, what happened was this woman was reaching for the microphone and actually felt bad because she was an intern and she was just doing what her bosses wanted her to do. And yes, Jim Acosta didn't make her job any easier, but Jim Acosta did not touch this woman inappropriately nor violently if you watch the undoctored video. And the only reason, like I said, he got his credentials revoked is because Donald Trump can't handle a little confrontation.
The thing about even this accusation is if that had happened, if Jim Acosta had just laid out Monica Lewinsky, then what would, like, the crowd, there would have been a reaction. Like,
right.
People, yeah, people in the surround, Donald Trump, who was 5 fucking feet away, there would have been a reaction, and it would be like, whoa.
Right. Like,
hey,
whoa, Jim.
Oh, Nelly.
I think you better leave now, Jim.
But that's not what it was literally no one doing anything because nothing happened.
And here's what I wonder, okay? You know, Donald Trump has his little rallies. He brings his little boyfriend Hannity out, and they point at all the cameras back there saying, fake news, you're all fake news, because they're not going to be part of Trump's propaganda machine. But the thing is, the media and the press does feed in to a lot of Donald Trump's power. They give him a lot of power because they cover all his press conferences, which get tense. They cover every Sarah Huckabee Sanders press conference, where all she does is sit there and tell the media how terrible they are. They broadcast every one of Donald Trump's stupid tweets. What if they just did the Treehouse of Horrors, The Simpsons? Remember that episode, Just Don't Look?
And then all the advertising dies?
Right. What if they just covered the boring stuff with Donald Trump? What if all these reporters didn't show up to Donald Trump's press conferences? What if they just didn't show up to Sarah Huckabee Sanders sitting out there lying through her teeth? They don't ask any questions. They don't ask the Trump administration side of the story. And they just report on it without giving them a chance to say their piece.
Like if they just took like whatever email they send out and then just regurgitated that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, they say, you know, Donald Trump told border guards that they could shoot at migrants throwing rocks. And they just report that because it's what he said. They don't go to Sarah Huckabee Sanders. They don't go to Donald Trump. They just report it without giving them a chance to give their side of the story.
I can tell you what will happen. If they all came together, and by they all, I mean fake news, came together and they were like, we're just done reporting fake news, then they would have to report Donald Trump's reaction to them not reporting fake news. So, like, if everyone ghosted, like, a DT press conference, then all the reporting would be on the follow-up tweet of Donald Trump talking about how he got ghosted at the DT press conference. Like, that's what it would be. Like, just because the part of the story that we're accustomed to them telling us would change, it doesn't mean that the story itself would change. It would still be the same narrative.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, Donald Trump would still do what Donald Trump wants to do because no one actually has the balls to stand up and stop him from doing anything. But, I mean, at least maybe Sarah Huckabee Sanders wouldn't have a job anymore.
Oh, because she'd have no one to talk to?
I mean, I don't know. Honestly, I think journalists need to stand up for themselves. I think more journalists need to do what Jim Acosta did. And a guy from NBC stood up and stuck up for him. And I forgot his name. He's on the Today Show every day. But I know the press and I know journalists don't want to become the story. But when you've got Donald Trump up there saying you're the enemy of the people and saying that factual reporting that is not flattering to Donald Trump is fake news, people are going to start believing that. So they need to start at least explaining themselves and standing up for themselves verbally.
Yes. But Jim Acosta is, I don't know what the best way to say this. Jim Acosta is not specifically targeted by Trump. He gets them all, right? Like, well, even like, did you see just like right afterwards when the Japanese reporter asked a question and Donald Trump was like, I don't understand you.
Right. Like, or that one woman asked why Trump was saying racist stuff. And then Trump says, I'm not a racist. You're a racist.
He says, say hello to Shinzo. What does that even mean? I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, what he said.
Yeah, that's what he said to the guy. Like the fuck, Donald? Yeah. But like the point is, I can't go to Donald Trump and be like, man, he's really, although, I mean, obviously he doesn't fuck with Fox News, except he did with Megyn Kelly. So, I mean, yes, he does. Like, he can do all of them. And he knows it's bullshit. Like, we've had this talk before. Donald Trump knows what news is bullshit. Like, and if you even question that, he knows that you're wrong. Like, he knows what is fake news.
Right.
And like, is everything he claiming that is fake news fake news? No. But he does know that like a percent of it is. And like,
right, there's enough CNN and NBC and the New York Times, they all make enough mistakes for him to point to as evidence and call them fake news. Like CNN might screw up here or there. NBC screws up here and there. So what Donald Trump is going to do is he's going to ignore the 99 times that CNN and NBC are factually accurate, point to the one time that they screw up and say, see this? This is false reporting. This is fake news. You know, these people aren't telling you the truth, and then you believe that everything they do is quote unquote fake news.
But what I'm saying is, like, he has the FBI. Like, he has the best at finding out, like, what is, like, he knows, Mike. That's the point I'm trying to make. Like, if he started telling the truth on everything, if he started to do that, and it was reported that way, he could still claim that was fake news. Like, because that's, like, how over he is with this concept. Like, it doesn't matter if it's true or not, man. That's, and all right, like, we're about to transition to this California shooter, right?
Yeah.
What's going to be told to us from over the next couple of days? And by the way, this is exhausting shit. Like, this is like just watching shit on repeat, right? At this point,
yeah.
Like, and
you know what? Last week, I think you and I tried our best to kind of take a break from it. But you can't. You can't take a break from it for very long.
No, because it's every fucking day. And a little bit, I you know what? Let me restart this thought. Give the rundown real quick of what just happened, and then I have a media opinion.
Okay. Well, first of all, last week, Fred, we didn't even talk at length about the 11 people who were killed in the Pittsburgh synagogue.
No.
And you know why? Because I had nothing new to offer. I really had nothing new to offer, and I feel like talking about this stuff is a waste of time because absolutely nothing is going to get done. So last week or the week before, we had this whack job go into a Pittsburgh synagogue and kill 11 people. This week, it was at a college night at a popular bar in Thousand Oaks, California. As of Thursday night when we're taping this, we don't have a whole lot of info on the shooter or the motive, but he was a 28-year-old former Marine. By all accounts, he had PTSD. For some reason, he picked this club, this bar in Thousand Oaks, California. It was a country bar where, you know, people listen to new country and do line dances. He walked in there with a handgun that had a modified, I forgot what was modified on it, but there was a
magazine, a modification, right?
What's that?
Was it a magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the magazine wasn't legal in the state of California, but the gun itself was. And he just started opening fire, and he killed 12 people. And, you know, Fred, it's happening at schools. It's happening at houses of worship. And, you know, we get numb to it, but there was something about, number one, seeing the sheriff of Ventura County not being able to hold back tears when he announced that one of his deputies died at the hospital. There's this man who's been all over the news, Jason Kaufman. His son, Cody Kaufman, was killed in the shooting. He's this real tough looking guy, and he's wearing all gray. He's wearing an LA Dodgers hat that's all gray, and he is on the news just sobbing because his son is now dead. And this is the first time in a long time I watched the news and I got a little choked up, because there's something about watching grown men just sobbing uncontrollably because they experienced a terrible loss suddenly out of the blue.
I don't know how much of that part of the story that I want to absorb. And the point I'm trying to make from that is the way that it's brought to us, specifically through media, is just so fucking sickening to me. Where, like, you have an occurrence and it is terrible. And now, if anyone claims otherwise, I'm going to call you a liar. We have a trend of these things in a way that is just astronomical to me. Unbelievable. Like, and the reason I don't understand it is because I'm not crazy. Like, that's the reason I don't understand it. There's somebody right now listening to our program that sometime in the future will be in or know someone or whatever, where they're going to be affected by this thing. And I think you'd mentioned before we started the broadcast, some of the victims of this shooting were actually in Vegas last year, 2 years ago, last year. God, time flies.
Last year.
Like,
there's so many the timelines blur together, but I believe it was last year, yes.
And we talked about how last week we didn't talk about the synagogue because there's not a conversation to be had, because whenever these things do occur, people don't talk about what can we do to help with, in my opinion, mental illness. What can we do to help with mental illness? The conversation is, what can we defend? Like, what here can we take our side on to have an argument in the defense of that thing?
Well, and Fred, if people do bring up mental illness, but what they do is they bring up mental illness as a way to say that guns aren't the problem. They say, oh, it's not guns, it's mental illness. It's all of this stuff. And the thing is, you know, it seemed like after Parkland, something was going to happen, because it seemed like legislators were willing to talk and compromise on things. The kids in Parkland, even though, you know, the far right just did awful, disgusting things in regards to David Hogg and his reputation, you know, people were keeping the issue front and center, and then it went away. And now it just seems when this happens, people are resigned. And like I said, nobody's going to do anything about it. Nobody's going to talk about any meaningful gun reform or background checks. So it's just going to happen, and we're going to be numb to it until it happens to somebody close to us, or it happens to us, God forbid. And yeah, Fred, you said, you know, you brought up the fact that some people who are in this club in California, they're also at the music festival in Las Vegas when a crazed gunman just started sniping people from high atop from his hotel window. And a lot of people are saying, oh, wow, that's terrible luck. That's Final Destination. That's not bad luck. That's how crazy shit is right now. That's how crazy things have gotten. And, you know, Fred, I hate saying this qualifier. I say this qualifier till I'm blue in the face. Overall, I'm a Second Amendment guy. But people need to start treating gun ownership as a sacred right that's reserved for only the best of society. And we need to start looking at things like people's online presence. Okay. If there's a guy that you know who owns a lot of guns and he starts posting violent crap, or he starts saying, you know, shoot all the whatevers, at least send someone over there to their house and say, hey, what's this post all about?
Well,
they look into it. And if they need to, yeah, you know what? Maybe they need to take that guy's gun away. Maybe we need to infringe on some gun owners' rights, because people's rights to live are being infringed.
Gosh,
on. So
I just don't know if I could disagree more though, Mike. Like I don't necessarily think it's owning a firearm, and I don't necessarily think it's that's the issue. The conversation about guns is being had all the time by a ton of people everywhere. The conversation that I feel is not being had is, how do you, if you see that, if you recognize what you just said you saw on social media, how do you have that conversation with someone? How do you bridge that? There's not like a conversation just specifically to me and you, like two male youngish now adults. We're not taught at any level how to speak to each other. And even not just on like violent stuff, like an example of you and I is, you know, over the last couple of years, I've gone through some really weird and dark shit, like really weird and heavy, dark shit. And, and I know you have struggled with how to bridge that conversation with me, and we are very close. So even with like people you care most about, there is not an avenue for people to outlet. And because there's not an avenue, people often recluse. So it's like, and I don't even know this guy's name, but if you're going to go to this shooter and be like, hey, what were his hobbies, interests, and his personality like outside of this violent act? If it's recluse, if it's internet junkie, if it's political junkie, if it's whatever it is, it's not fucking healthy is what it is. So you have to find a way, in my opinion, to have the discourse about what can we do for individuals so that they feel like they have an outlet outside of like these fucking atrocious acts. And then on top of that, whenever they are committed, how do you keep our our 24-hour news cycle, chew him up, spit him out machine to not publish his manifesto and to not give me his motive and to not tell me that he was saw at a Trump or a Clinton or an Obama rally? Or how do you mute that? How do you mute that and then turn up the volume on, here's how you help? Because the only time I hear about here's how you help is whenever Robin Williams fucking kills himself. Like, that's not where we're at. That's not where we need to be. We need to be in a place where you assist people all the time. Being kind is not hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're talking about is a more holistic approach, right? Anytime something like this happens, you get a group of people saying, it's the guns. It's the guns' fault. And then you get another group of people saying, no, it's not guns, it's mental health. And since those people disagree on that main point, they're not willing to listen to each other. And then you're right, Fred. After this happens, the first thing we think, okay, you know, are they white? Are they Middle Eastern? Are they conservative? Are they liberal? And everybody thinks that each aspect of this is the magical key, when really they're all small pieces of a bigger puzzle that we need to look at. You're 100% right, Fred. We need to look at mental health, but we can't look at mental health as a way to avoid a conversation about who has access to weapons. Same thing with talking about gun control.
You're right.
You know,
yeah.
We don't look at what we can change when it comes to gun control and ignore mental health. You know, all these things need to work together. And, you know, political affiliation, there's wackos on both sides. You had a far right wacko sending pipe bombs that didn't go off to a bunch of Democrats the other week. And then this week, you got Antifa demonstrators showing up on Tucker Carlson's lawn, threatening his family. I'm no Tucker Carlson fan. I don't weep for Tucker Carlson if he's out in public and someone comes up to him and confronts him verbally. But, you know, you don't threaten a man and his family. So there's wackos on both sides. Yeah, I don't know, Fred. Like I said, I don't know what else to add to this conversation. We have this conversation every time it happens, and we seem to come back to, we need to talk about all of these things instead of just using them as mechanisms to avoid something, talking about something else.
I feel like we just have to start removing variables. Like, you have to start removing, like, the end game, in my opinion. So, for instance, if someone who's motivated to do something of this nature, no, we can't ID why it happened. And I think it's going to be really hard, but I think we can ID all the post stuff, and I think we can eliminate it. And that's kind of where I'm caught up right now, is there's a big difference in putting someone's, you know, file footage mugshot on air and putting their name on the TV. And like I mentioned earlier, copying and pasting every tweet they ever had into a compilation of weird shit.
You're right. The infamy, which is another big part that I didn't even think of a second ago. Well,
and that's the part where I'm stuck on. I think there's a pursuit of that, because in today's day and age, and I'm about to sound like old man slow, it's really fucking hard for young adults and kids to be regular. Like, there's this idea, and I know, I don't know, I mean, I guess the American dream has changed quite a bit over the years, but there's this idea that you're just like The Voice or American Idol or enough Instagram followers or whatever, a YouTube video, away from being a big fucking deal. And for real, no one's going to end up being a big fucking deal. Like, the percent is so small. So, like, if this is the way that they think they can make an impact, or I think you just have to eliminate that. You have to find a way to help that culture and help everyone just be okay with themselves. And it's hard. Yeah, I've struggled with it.
The culture's not going to fix itself overnight, much like we didn't get to this point overnight. Not our most fun show, Fred, but I felt like it was quite therapeutic. Thanks for listening, Paul's. Bye.
Good job, everyone. GG.